The Up and Under podcast is proud to be a part of Off the Ball Network. For all things basketball, football, soccer, golf, baseball, sports betting, you name it, go to offtheballnetwork.com and check out the amazing articles posted by writers of the network, including yours truly, and the other podcasts on basically every sport under the sun. Off the Ball Network, your home for quality sports and entertainment content. SeatGeek is the newest sponsor of Off the Ball Network. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a 99.9% chance you love sports. But watching these games in person is super expensive. To help ease the pain in your wallet, use the promo code OffTheBallNetwork to get a $20 discount for first-time users of SeatGeek. Your next best night ever is waiting, and SeatGeek has the tickets.
I'm ready when y'all are, I guess.
All right, ready?
Yep.
All right, 3, 2, whatever.
What is good, everybody? It's your boy Francis Carlotta on episode 50 of the Up and Under podcast. That's right, y'all. The big 5-0, 50 episodes, and just thinking about it, it's pretty wild. I mean, we started this podcast, me, Connor, Grant, just during COVID because we had nothing else to do. We couldn't leave the house, and we thought, oh, we had a radio show in college. Why not make it a podcast? And look at us now, 50 episodes later, and hopefully 50 more, even more than that moving forward. What happened to just 50? So many more episodes moving forward. And unfortunately, no Connor Byrne today. Hopefully he's doing okay. I know he's super busy with business school. Hopefully we get him on soon, especially for doing the All-NBA draft and when we start talking about playoff basketball. But I am joined by a man who just joined Twitter. Finally, he has his own Twitter account. So if you have a Twitter, go follow him. Grant Hechinger, what's going on, man? What's your profile picture going to be, or your Twitter avatar? Because right now you're just like the basic, the one. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I think it's going to stay that way.
The whole time?
I would not recommend anyone go follow me. You're not going to be getting much content out of it. I'm really just there to lurk and spy and read up on my things I want to follow. I'm not going to be putting much out there in the world, but I have dipped my toe into a comment here and there. I did comment on one post, I think yesterday. Someone asked, what name one athlete in one video game you dominated with any sport. And I said, Tracy McGrady in NBA Live 2004, cause I absolutely loved that and always played with him. And got some response to that. So
there we go.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
So I guess I get why people are into it. But yeah, 50 episodes, man. It's momentous day for us. It took us three years to get 50. At this rate, it might take us 10 to get the next 50.
For real.
Yeah, we'll see. But it's been a fun time, and I've enjoyed every single episode and every second of it.
Absolutely. That was very sweet, Grant. I appreciate that. I just want to say those NBA Live games were so good. Like the 3-point contest, the dunk contest in those games were incredible. Like I would just spend hours playing the dunk contest with random people just doing like, there was like a dunk where you do like gymnastic flips and then do like a 360 between the legs dunk. And you just look like Spider-Man or something. Like it was so cool.
I remember I got NBA Live 2004 and like never, and 2005 was the year that the dunk contest was added. But I like kept playing 2004 for years and just like never got a new game. I think I just wasn't like, that wasn't as big of a thing, at least for me. I wasn't like a huge gamer and my parents were going to just buy me like every version of the game every year, which is like, I could have fun playing NBA Live 2004. I didn't care. So I never really got good at the dunk contest. When I did eventually get NBA Live 05 or play at friends' houses, I was always terrible at the dunk contest, but, but the commercials for the dunk contest made it look really cool for sure. So
absolutely. Yeah. All right. So Being this is our 50th episode, me and Grant are from Memphis, Tennessee, breaking news. So we love the Grizzlies. We love the Tigers. I am going to ask you a Tigers question because we haven't talked about what happened in the NCAA tournament. That was a heartbreaking loss, to say the least. For those who don't know, Memphis lost to Florida Atlantic in the first round. I know this is an NBA, but I'm curious, Grant, to hear your thoughts on the game and on the season as a whole. I know that's a lot, but I'm curious.
Yeah. I'll start with the jump ball call or the non-jump ball call. Yeah. The jump ball call, non-timeout call. I think in replay, it's 100% should have been a timeout and not a jump ball. I'm not even sure there was a jump ball like that happened really. I think that's like really opened my eyes also to like the amount of jump balls that are called that like aren't even really a battle profession. I think refs have lost touch with what a jump ball is. It's just like if the other player touches the ball at all, they call a jump ball immediately. So it's really opened my eyes to that. But in the moment, like it's a bang bang play and the refs, there's a lot going on. I don't really like blame it on that as much as, you know, our play down the stretch. And the just absolute curse that's on the program to get beaten by a buzzer beater every single game, basically. But overall, I mean, obviously very sad to lose that way, especially with Fairleigh Dickinson waiting for you in the next round and with FAU now advancing to the Final Four. The path was open for us to be where FAU is right now. So super sad, but I still do come out of the season higher on Penny and higher on the program than I think I was before the season. I think this was a accumulation of learnings that Penny has had over the years, learning how to coach, that really kind of was a breakthrough year for him. We see now 2 years in a row with very different teams. He's been able to have really excellent teams by the end of the year, tournament teams. And next year is going to be another challenge, a lot of roster turnover. You're obviously losing your two best players who are the center pieces of everything you did. So we're going to see how he does with that, but I come out of this like with more confidence for sure than I had in Penny before the season.
It's hard for me to add on because I don't want to just say the same stuff. I fully agree. One thing I'll add is I also have an issue with the refs not calling. I thought Katie got fouled when he hurt his ankle. Like you got to give him space to land. He didn't give him space to land. That's a foul, and that should have been called. He hurt his ankle. I actually want to credit Penny for rolling the dice on keeping DeAndre out there with four fouls. That was, yep. I mean, I wrote an article. I did the recap for the game for Bluff City Media, and that was a very emotional game to cover. And I wrote an article that the highest gamble, like this isn't Vegas, this is Columbus, Ohio, but the highest stake gamblers in Vegas, they wouldn't even make that call. They wouldn't take that bet. Like, that is a mind-blowing thing that Penny Hardaway did to roll the dice and have DeAndre out there with four fouls for, like, what, 13, 15 minutes of the game? Like, that's wow. And it paid off. I mean, he kept Memphis back in the game. He helped Memphis get the 7-point lead in the second half that, unfortunately, Memphis wasn't able to hold on to. But it worked. Like, so it was more like a damned if you do, damned if you don't type thing, because we know how important DeAndre is to that team. And if Penny did let DeAndre just trust him and trust that he can play without fouling, which is, thinking about DeAndre's career, was his biggest issue. Yeah. And for him to do it in the biggest moment was great for DeAndre, a great move by Penny. And it's just unfortunate that Memphis couldn't pull that out in the end. It's unfortunate. Go ahead, sir.
What it really was also was just a like perfect storm of all of our Achilles heels. It was DeAndre's foul trouble. It was Katie's ankle. It was the lack of energy, especially when DeAndre was on the court. Malcolm Dandridge like took a huge step back, diverted to old Malcolm Dandridge of just like having no energy. Every time he made like some kind of bad play, he just like hunched his shoulders and like didn't get back on defense. That is not the Malcolm Dandridge we've seen since he came back from injury earlier this year. He's been like a completely new guy, but he went back to that. And that's why Kendrick Davis was yelling at Malcolm Dandridge. So it was just like a perfect storm of everything that could go wrong for us, all of our weaknesses in one game. And we still only lost in buzzer beater to a team that's in the Final Four now. So that's pretty good. What I'm going to look for now for Penny to do is to like not have as many weaknesses basically. And that's going to be through a little bit better roster construction. Not just relying on those two guys being able to fill out the roster with other shooters and other contributors. And a main thing for next year is a big man, a inside presence. Because I don't think we have that. I've had that consistently this year. So
I agree. I absolutely agree. Yeah, not too much. I don't want to belabor the point too much on the Tigers, yeah, but
we can move on.
It'll be a fascinating offseason, to say the very least, on the roster that he constructs, because it's going to be very different, like you said. He has a great recruiting class coming in, and I got to watch Mikey Williams and J.J. Taylor in person. I have my own thoughts on those two guys,
yeah,
especially J.J. I'm not a fan. I just got to say, I'm not a fan of J.J. Taylor. But I actually do like Mikey. I'm more on the higher end of the opinions on Mikey. But either way, it'll be interesting to see what he does with the transfer portal, too, trying to get guys to fill out the roster.
Let me say one last thing. I have not been as irrationally high on a recruit as I am on Ashton Hardaway, I think, since Karan Iverson. That was the last
time. Oh, my God.
I think who I was just like, oh, my God, I love this guy. Ashton Hardaway, I'm high on. He's big. He can really shoot. I think he's a player.
He can shoot.
I think he's going to be a contributor from day one, and I think he's going to blossom into like a college star for sure. That's what I see from him.
Nice. Weren't you big on Nick King? Or am I tripping?
I was big on Nick King too.
Yeah, I thought you were super big on Nick King.
I was. I would say probably I was more rationally high on Karan Iverson, though. I was just so excited for Karan Iverson. But
yeah,
well, that did not work out the way I was hoping.
So unfortunately,
hopefully Ashton does.
Didn't Karan transfer to Rhode Island?
He did. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. All right. Enough Tiger talk. Great. So let's. We are still talking about the Grizzlies, though, because again, 50th episode. We're from Memphis. Let's just talk about the Memphis stuff for now, and then because we got playoffs going on, we're going to be doing all NBA stuff, playoff predictions, and that for another episode. So a lot has happened with the Memphis Grizzlies in the past month. It's just been a whirlwind of absolute chaos and just headlines left, right, center regarding Ja Morant, the Memphis Grizzlies. It's been a lot. I know how it's been for you out there in Charlotte, Grant, but for me out here in San Diego, I just keep getting messages from people I know out here saying, what's going on with Memphis? What do you see what's happening with Ja? It's been a lot. So we have a lot of things we're going to be discussing for the Memphis Grizzlies. So let's start off with, Ja Morant. Me and Grant, we texted about it in our group chat, but we haven't really talked about it personally. So I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on, it's been basically 3 or 4 weeks now at this point, but everything with Ja Morant, how are you feeling? What were your initial reactions and just thoughts on the suspension, his transition back into the team? It's a lot, but it's open-ended question. What are your thoughts on Ja?
Yeah. My initial reaction was just like pure immaturity. It seems almost to me like he's a teenager going through a phase where he just thinks guns are really cool. And he's in the NBA. Like the alcoholism stuff is ridiculous. People saying he's alcoholic. He's in the NBA. He's 23 years old. He's going out and having fun, but obviously he needs to do that in a way that's understanding his profile and who he is. And understanding like the context of the previous couple months where he'd been in the headlines for other stories potentially involving firearms, and he goes out in club and waves a gun on Instagram Live. It's not at all good. It's not what you want to see. And then to hear that the day before, Steven Adams held a team meeting talking about off the court behavior and everyone needing to be responsible and go out less on road trips. And then for Ja just to go out and do this, it was the night Brandon Clark tore his Achilles. Brandon Clark's probably in the hospital, already has the news. The team probably knows he's got a torn Achilles and Ja's out partying. All of it's like a bad look, and it just shows immaturity. That being said, I think like Jalen Rose offered like the best perspective on it that I've heard, where he said, you know, this was him. He was in this same sort of lifestyle, hang out with these same sort of people. And he thinks this is maybe one of the best things that could have happened for Ja. No one got hurt. It happened pretty early in his career. It's a huge lesson for him to learn, very much in the public eye. Everyone knows about it. Everyone's criticizing, everyone's criticizing and supporting him for it. Depending on where you land, or, you know, there's a Venn diagram of that as well. But yeah, best thing that could have happened was this happening early, no one getting hurt. Hopefully Ja learns the lesson and moves on from here and moves past, like I said, this phase of thinking that this is what he needs to be when all he needs to be is an NBA superstar. It's obviously there's another layer to it as far as him being a superstar from Memphis and us being Memphians. We know the kind of rap that the city gets, and there's been a lot of stuff lately that is not helping that rap. And this is a huge part of that as well. But we're all behind Ja, all support him. I know he's a good kid. Like I have no doubts that he's a really good kid who's maybe gotten a little confused, a little carried away. And he's talked about his mental health issues as well. But no doubt that he'll recover, and he's got a good support system from behind him. I think he's got a great family. His dad's very supportive and very present in his life, his mom as well. So I don't think this is going to be something that's going to be a trend and like actually his career is going to be derailed in any way. It's just kind of a blip on the radar, but something that he needed to go through and definitely a lesson he needed to learn.
Yeah, I agree. I think those are really great points that you shared, especially in terms of, you know, this he made a mistake. It's a bad look. Like, there's no denying that it was wrong what he did. It's a horrible look for him, his image, his brand. I mean, he's about to have his own shoe come out, and it's supposed to, he just had the Nike like summit thing at the All-Star game where it's like Mount Ja or whatever the heck it was called. And it was just, this was supposed to be his time. And instead, the national media is talking about him in such a negative light. And there are so many different layers to it, you know, racially being the fact he plays for the Memphis Grizzlies, as you touched on earlier. Like, there's so many layers to this that make this whole situation, in my opinion, bigger than it really should be. Now, was it bad? Yes. Was it a bad look? Yes. Was it a mistake? Absolutely. But the way that this has been portrayed nationally by so many media outlets, I'll break it down in this way. First of all, as soon as the Ja Morant stuff happened, every single article, the headline stated, Ja Morant suspended. Ja Morant suspended by whoever. Grant, he wasn't suspended by the Grizzlies. He wasn't suspended by the NBA until the most recent suspension. And those are facts, man. Like, he chose on his own self to leave the team, to go and step away from the team. The Grizzlies didn't suspend him. There were tons of reporters constantly asking Taylor Jenkins, why haven't you suspended? Why haven't the Grizzlies, not you, Taylor Jenkins, why haven't the Grizzlies suspended Ja Morant? And Taylor like, well, we're looking into it. We don't have all the details. We're still waiting on the NBA investigation, blah, blah, blah. Because the Grizzlies didn't suspend him. Ja Morant by himself, well, I don't know if it was by himself, but regardless, Ja Morant was the one who took his leave from the team. So that headline, like that attention-grabbing, clickbaity headline, that's rooted in unfortunate situations, that unfortunate circumstances, because it's a very layered situation. Like that bothers me so much, because that's just not what happened. He wasn't suspended by the team. He wasn't suspended by the NBA until the 8-game suspension that was officially announced just a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half ago. So that one. Two, I've heard the take from Jay Williams, ESPN's Jay Williams, where he stated that, well, you know, I think Ja Morant should have been suspended for the rest of the season. He should have been suspended for the rest of the year, which is like at that point around 20 games by the NBA. And yeah, come back for the playoffs, whatever. But the season, no. The NBA should have set an example, because it's a really bad look for his impact on the youth, and how it sends the wrong message for NBA players and all this stuff. Man, look, I could not disagree with that more. I cannot. I've been asked multiple times, what do you think about the suspension? I think it's the perfectly fair suspension. 8 games. He already left for five of those games because he himself, again, not the NBA, not the Grizzlies, he himself chose to go to counseling, take a step away from the team, and miss those games. So the NBA was like, all right, you missed those 5 games? Fine. We're going to suspend you 3 more and call that an 8-game suspension without pay. Fine. That's fair enough. To me, that is 100% fair. Because A, I don't, for whatever reason, this somehow shocks people, he didn't do anything illegal. He didn't break any laws. It wasn't his gun. In Colorado, I will read to you the statute. You must be at least 18 years old and must not have any state or federal prohibitions in order to own a firearm in Colorado. So you are allowed to own a gun in Colorado. And it's not his gun. It's not his gun. So why are people saying, oh, he should be suspended for the rest of the season for 20 games? He didn't do anything illegal at all. And this is my, I talked to you before we started recording. This is my belief that I was like, should I say this or not? But I believe it, so I'm just going to say it. Grant, if Tyler Hero did this, do you think this would have been as big of a deal? I'm just saying. I'm just saying, man. It's the fact that it's Ja Morant, a young black man from the city of Memphis. It's a bad look. I agree it's a bad look, but I'm just saying, man. If it were somebody else, I don't know if this would have been as big of a deal.
It's hard to separate. I think there's a lot of variables in there because it's hard to separate out the fact that Ja had already had multiple stories of incidents, right, where he's in confrontations. Potentially there's guns involved. You know, some witnesses, some reports say there's no guns. Some reports say there was a gun, whatever. We're not sure. Like, some of it's hearsay to a degree. And potentially part, like, I mean, there's things out there saying, you know, that's all smear campaign. People are reposting stuff that's already been resolved. And just, there's an attack on Ja, but it's hard to separate that out. Like, I don't think this would have been as big a deal if that hadn't been the case. If there wasn't already this buildup of those things at all, I don't think we would have reached this peak of interest and critique that we have. There's definitely the possibility that, you know, Tyler Herro does not even all that outside all those variables controlled for, that Tyler Herro does not receive the same type level of criticism. That's definitely possible. But I think the main issue was just the buildup of Jaws incidents and his reputation, the buildup of Grizzly's reputation on top of
yeah,
the Memphis reputation as well that it already has.
For sure.
So
yeah. I agree. It was like kind of like what you said about the Tigers. This whole Ja thing was like the perfect storm for it to be just a national headline for weeks to come, because it was just a perfect buildup, perfect situation. The Grizzlies' reputation is trying to be like the viewed by other people, the bad boys of the NBA, the villains of the NBA, all that stuff. Yeah, I agree.
Which, again, that's what bothered me the most, is that, like, whatever, trying to be the villain. Okay, that's fine within the sidelines, on the court. If you want to, like, lean into that bad boy reputation, that's fine. But, you know, he knows already all the things that are swirling about him, and seeming in just like an act of stubbornness, he goes out and does this. Like, this seems like it was very stubborn by him to be like, all that stuff. He's probably thinking all that stuff's false. They don't know me. Like, I'm just like messing around, whatever. Like, none of, I was protecting my family. None of that's like true. That's all just fake. And so, like, he just very stubbornly goes on Instagram Live. He's like, this is what y'all want to see or something, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just not understanding. It's the immaturity again. It's not understanding, like, yeah, that's a completely different thing than leaning into the bad boy on the court, reputation. So, definitely a lot of growth that's going to be had. And again, I told you before the episode that, I'm going to be playing a little bit of devil's advocate here. I think that was my idea behind just having all these Grizzlies topics, a lot of negative stuff going on. I'm going to come in from the negative side. You might counter with positive if you want to, or you might agree with me. But we talk positive a lot of times about the Grizzlies. So,
yeah,
it's good to air our grievances as well. I think obviously the Grizzlies play with a ton of joy, and that's a huge part of who they are. I don't love personally that Ja has come back and immediately been so loud and so vocal and so brash on the court. Like, I feel like we need a little bit more humility. He stepped away, and that's great. Come back, show a little more humility. I mean, it's great he's coming off the bench, but to show a little more humility, understand, like, you need to, like, build back your reputation, your love, and the ability to play with the cockiness that he typically plays with. I feel like he's come out and just been brash immediately. And I want him to earn, show us a little bit more. I think it would be showing some more maturity if he came out calmer, just let his game do the talking, went about his business, and then earn that back, earn that cockiness back over time. He's come back and immediately been loud. I don't love to see it. You probably disagree with me. And then like, I know that's a big part of his game, but it does rub me the wrong way considering what he has done and what he's put the team through recently.
Yeah, I would say a good degree of that is fair in a sense that maybe he should just try and like just do basketball for now and then build up the better graces in the eyes of the public. But I guess my counter is I think he is doing that, especially that it was his idea to come off the bench. And there's been a lot of opinions as to whether or not he should have actually came off the bench. Lots of Grizzlies people, well, reputable Grizzlies people were like, that's stupid. Why is that happening? He should just start. He's Ja Morant, blah, blah, blah.
You're talking about Joel Mullinax, because I saw Joel Mullinax tweet a rant about it. And I was like, why do you care? He's just coming off the bench for like two games. It doesn't matter. You should not have this much of an opinion about this. Anyways, I thought that tweet was stupid.
Well, I guess I am talking about Joe and other.
He's not going to listen to this, so I'm calling him out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's technically a colleague of mine, but either way, it doesn't matter. That's been an opinion, not just by Joe, but other people as well, stating that that's stupid. Why is he coming off the bench? And it was, from what we understand, it was his decision to do so. So that, to me, shows humility. That shows that he is trying to be a more mature person, not feeling like he's entitled to just coming straight back into the starting lineup after everything that's gone on. And from what I saw, at least in his first game that he came back against Houston, I'm not really sure how you thought he was being super brash, and especially in his first game back. I thought he was pretty like even keel. Even when he posterized Kenyon Martin Jr., he didn't really like massively celebrate.
He flexed on him and screamed. I mean, maybe that game there wasn't a lot. I don't know. But there definitely have been plenty of moments over like what the three games he's played now. There have been plenty of moments where he's been talking trash, screaming at the crowd, whatever, like flexing. Again, that's part of his game, and I normally wouldn't care about that. I just would like for him to just do the basketball thing right now, and then like you'll earn back. Like, come off the bench is great. It's gonna take some time to like earn our trust back for me.
I think the on-court actions, those are more fitting. I'm more giving more of a leeway if he's going to do it at home with a Memphis crowd behind him, where he's still trying to show the crowd that he is still Ja Morant. And that was a big concern for me, is how aggressive is he going to be offensively? Is it going to be like a Ben Simmons thing where he comes back and he's not there mentally and he's not aggressive and he doesn't look to get his own shot or attack the rim? Thankfully, he still is playing like Ja Morant. And still going to the rim, playing like the you know who he is. And so my gut says a lot of his, I guess, bravado is more so trying to show the Memphis crowd that, look, I'm still Ja Morant. I love you guys. I love that y'all back me. Like, this means a lot to me. And I'm going to show you that I'm going to come back and be a better person. And, like, you know, like the whole Skip Bayless thing with him saying it's a parade in Selma City, like after the interview, first of all, shut up, Skip. That's stupid. He's been doing it all year. It's just a rap lyric. It's not even like a profane bad rap lyric. Whatever. Shut up. But like he did the thing where he gave his shoes to a kid in the crowd, and no one talks about that. Like, no one's like, oh well, good for Ja Morant showing some like giving the shoe to a kid. Like, no one talks about that stuff, but he does it a lot, and he did it again. And it's like, I think at home, I'm more okay with him playing up to himself, playing up to the crowd, and playing up to Memphis. On the road, we'll see. Because I don't think the Grizzlies, like, they play Atlanta, I think, tonight. Yeah, they play Atlanta tonight. I'm curious. I'm curious to see how a road stadium, road fans, will treat Ja, if they're going to boo him, if they're going to heckle him. This will be I'm very interested in that. Because the national perspective of Ja Morant is very different than the Memphis perspective of Ja Morant right now. So I am very curious, especially, hell, in the playoffs too, man. Like, depending on our matchup, hell, if we play the Lakers in the first round, Lakers fans are so pissed off at Ja. They hate him so much right now. Like, I have so many Lakers friends out here in Southern California, and they're all talking so much shit about Ja Morant, about the Grizzlies and all this stuff. So I feel like that crowd might be like, they're going to, I don't think it'll be a very friendly environment, to say the least. especially with the Shaedon Sharpe thing that happened a couple months ago. Like,
oh yeah,
like it'll be very interesting to see what happens on the road with John Morant in Memphis.
Yeah, 100%. All right, let me continue to be the devil's advocate here and turn a lot of Grizz fans against me. I have a
follow him on Twitter.
I have a trying to think, is this a question, a hypothetical for you? A hypothetical.
Okay.
I'm not saying this is what we should do. I'm not saying I want us to do this. And I also want to caveat to saying this. This came to my mind. I thought of this before the Ja incident happened. This is not a reaction to that. That obviously has had some continued effects on my thinking with this, but this was not initially a reaction to that. This was a reaction to on the court stuff entirely. So I'm just going to ask it. What if the Grizzlies traded Ja?
I mean, my follow would be for what? For who? Like, what's coming back? Like, that's the immediate response. Like, do you have a trade package in mind?
I don't have a full trade package. I have a couple players in mind that I think would be ideal, and who knows if they're gettable or not, especially at this point. I'll preface it with like my reasoning for why this is even something that maybe possibly should be a consideration in the back of your mind. It's just hard. It's kind of hard to win with a small non-shooting point guard as your best player.
Mm-hmm.
And someone like Ja, who's very reliant on athleticism, getting the basket, the future of that also is a little shaky historically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ja's also clearly been very reliant on Steven Adams. His screen setting and his offensive rebounding have been crucial to Ja's success. Without Steven Adams, once Steven Adams went down with Ja on the court, we did not look very good. Since Ja went down without Steven Adams, we'd looked better, because I guess it feels like Tyus Jones is not as reliant on that. Our team is not as reliant on that when Ja's on the court. There's also, it's not a coincidence that our fourth quarter performance has really improved since Ja's been out. Like, that's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
Teams know what to expect from us in the fourth quarter. We become very predictable, and there's a way to stop it. You know, it's similar to the Giannis effect, just like walling up against Ja. There's a way to stop it. We become a little bit more egalitarian when Ja's out. Ball moves quicker. That's not to say Ja's not extremely good. All the numbers will tell you he's one of the best players in the NBA. There's no like fakeness to like his counting stats or anything. All the advanced numbers will tell you he's one of the best players in the NBA. It's just kind of hard to have a small non-shooting point guard be your best player, especially when you have Steven Adams is such an important critical piece as a non-shooter, and Dylan Brooks not shooting well at all. You could obviously counter and say like, well, maybe we should move those guys instead of Ja, which I would listen to as well. But it's just hard to make that lineup work. There's also the potential of the future of Jaren playing center. That's what I wanted for a long time, but Steven has become so critical. And Jaren has done so well in this role. That I don't know. We'll see what happens there. That being said, the players I have in mind, the number one candidate I would have in mind would be for Tyrese Haliburton. Very good shooter, good size, good defender, really, really good team player. Doesn't need to like dominate the ball. Obviously love Tyrese Haliburton, probably not gettable. I don't even know. I mean, do you think the Pacers would trade Tyrese Haliburton for Ja at this point, considering they probably have to give up some extra stuff as well?
My gut says no, especially with what's happened. I guess in a perfect world with none of this stuff has gone on, I still don't think so. I don't know off the top of my head how old Tyrese is. I'm assuming he's older than Ja.
They're about the same age. Close.
Yeah,
22 or 23.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know off the top of my head. They're probably close in age because
Ja's probably a little older. They both spent 2 years in college, and I think Tyrese came out a year later. So
yeah,
Ja's probably a year older. Tyrese is 23 and Ja's 23, right? But probably like 6 months older or something.
I was staying pulled up.
Ja is 23. Six months older.
Same age. Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. Grizzlies fans, go ahead, sir.
Let me just name the other candidate too before we get into this, just the prospect of this. Other candidate, and I think probably more gettable, but not as ideal, but still I would kind of like it. Would be Darius Garland. That's the other. So those are the two young, really good shooting point guards, in the range of Ja, like somewhere in that all-star range that Ja is that we could go get. So yeah, the other thing is, what could we get with smaller contracts for those guys with the pieces that come back in that trade as well? Is there something else we could go make just an absolute crazy offer for Mikal Bridges? That's just another thing to maybe factor in, or Mikal Bridges or somebody like that. Could we go just take that of those extra assets, make some bonkers offer for him? Obviously that's not a fair comparison. Like, would you rather have Tyrese Halliburton and Mikal Bridges or just Ja Morant? Like, I don't think that's that bad of a comparison.
That's not fair.
But still, I just think it's not something that is just a non-starter for me, at least. And I'll let you go from there.
No, it's interesting. Tyrese is I would not trade Ja for Garland, even though I like Garland a lot. I didn't like him for whatever reason coming out of college, but I like him now. That's for sure.
Probably because he's played five games in college.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. But he's done very well. He's a very good basketball player. I think he'd be good. Ideally, obviously, Tyrese is better. Like, there's no question about that. Very good 3-point shooter, great passer, great defender. He's got size. He has length. Like, he's a very good basketball player, obviously. But that's an interesting thought. Like, I'm actually curious to hear what other Grizzlies fans would think if you would rather have Tyrese or Ja Morant at this moment in time.
Ja's better. It's not a massive gap at all.
No.
And Tyrese is a lot easier to fit and to like build that's a team around.
That's what I'm about to say.
And then from the Pacers perspective, like, Ja is a superstar. He's better. He's going to sell tickets. Like, they can talk them into it that way. Whether they would do that or not, I don't know. But that would be the upside for the Pacers, at least.
You're right. And that's what I was going to say is the fit. Like, Tyrese's fit, looking at the way the Grizzlies were playing without Ja, it's like the whole debate is, are the Grizzlies better without Ja Morant? I don't think they are better without Ja Morant. But there is something to be said that when he's not playing, that the ball moves a little bit better. It doesn't stick as much. Like you said, the fourth quarter stuff. There's credence to that idea. But still, the point is, Ja Morant, as you stated, is a phenomenal basketball player. Top 15 at worst. You know, at best, a top 8 player in the NBA, maybe top 7. And he's fantastic. He's a phenomenal basketball player who elevates a team's floor monumentally and raises the team's ceiling at the same time. It's rare you get guys like that. But it's still, there's credence to at least the thought that since he isn't a shooter and he isn't a great defender because he's a smaller dude, that fit-wise with Jaren Jackson, who has been fantastic since Ja Morant hasn't been playing as much. Even he's still been great even when Ja's coming off the bench, but Jaren's been great over the past week and a half. Desmond Bane has also been playing very well, but really the big one's really Jaren. Like, that's another discussion in Grizzlies media Twitterverse. If like eventually can Jaren be a better player than Ja Morant? And I think yes. I think his ceiling is higher because he is a 3-point shooter. He's a defensive player of the year right now. He's the defensive player of the year in my opinion, and he can defend every position. He can shoot the ball. He can finish at the rim. He can handle a little bit, put the ball on the floor. And I think there's a world that exists where Jaren is ranked ahead of Ja Morant in terms of like NBA player standings. And I would not trade Ja Morant. But the Tyrese thing is interesting to ponder. And the other thing I've thought about as well is, if Ja doesn't get all NBA, that affects his Supermax eligibility.
That was gonna be my other point.
Yeah, it's like it affects his Supermax eligibility. So
well, not just Supermax eligibility, his next, his next contract will be, I think, like $7 million a year less.
Yeah,
his current contract right now.
For sure, and that's a lot of money. Like in the NBA for salary, that's a lot of money. So I personally don't think he'll get All NBA. Not to say that I don't believe he's an All NBA guard, but I don't think he's going to get it. It's voted on by the media. With what's going on, they're going to look at his games played, look at what's going on the past like month and a half. I just don't think he's going to get it. Not to think that I don't believe he should, but I just don't think he will.
Let me know. My fingers are crossed that that is the set scenario that's going to play out, that he does not get All NBA, because like what a blessing that would be, especially with what's going on right now. But what a blessing that would be to have a lesser contract from him. You already have your Jaren descending contract. And with Desmond Bane's coming up like that, like teams don't like fall into like these two incredible players on really good contracts, like better than expected contracts. So like what a blessing that would be.
I 100% agree. That's the point I was going to make as well. If he doesn't get the Supermax, it opens up the possibilities way more for the Grizzlies in their future in roster building. They're not limited. They're not cuckolded to having three max guys. And well, Jaren's not fully maxed out, but Desmond hasn't gotten his contract yet. He's going to get paid. There's no question about that. So if Jaren doesn't get a Supermax, that actually really opens up the ability for the front office to have more flexibility to sign guys, to match cap salary, to match salaries and get proper trade pieces. Like it actually would help the Grizzlies. It would not be good for Ja because he loses out on a crap ton amount of money. But also at the same time, we've talked about this before. When you make that much money, what's like $7 million a year? Like it's not a big deal. So it's not that big of a deal when you're making that much. So yeah, it's I would not trade Ja Morant at all. But it's an interesting proposition, especially Tyrese. If you told me right now that we traded for Tyrese Haliburton, we got like two first-round picks and a like pick swap and Tyrese Haliburton for Ja Morant, that would be like, I don't know if I'd be upset. I don't know if I'd be upset. That's all I'll say.
But you're saying you would say no to that. You're saying you'd say no to it no matter. I mean, like assuming a reasonable but very good offer like that, you would say no matter what.
I would say no to it. If it happened, I don't know if I'd be like mega upset, but I would still say no. I don't want to trade Ja Morant.
I would say yes. If we got two first round picks along with Tyrese Haliburton, I would say yes. And I would go trade six first round picks for Mikal Bridges and I would win a championship right now.
Maybe it's me not being pragmatic about it.
It's fair. And I understand like the attachment to Ja and like everything he means to the city and he's better than Tyrese Haliburton. So like it's traditional wisdom is the team trading the better player loses the trade 99% of the time. So I understand the hesitation for sure. But it's very interesting to me, the idea of getting Tyrese Haliburton.
It's interesting, man. Man, I was not ready for that question. That wasn't in what you texted me.
It was not. I did not want to put that in writing. I didn't want to put that in writing.
I was not ready for that at all. All right, well, that was good. You mentioned talking about missed draft opportunities. Was that like a front office like issue? What were you thinking when in that talking point?
Yeah, we don't have to spend too much time on this. It's kind of something we've talked a little bit about in the past, but like obviously we love Zach Kleiman. He's our hero and everything, and he's done a great job. But it feels like this team is a little shakier than it has to be because of, despite, you know, obviously getting Desmond Bane, getting Santi Aldama, getting Brandi Clark, all these huge draft hits, the amazing job of evaluation they do. It's just the slight bleeding of value, starting biggest one being, obviously I talked about Trey Murphy a lot, but Zaire over Trey Murphy is haunting us, especially Trey Murphy hit 10 threes last night. We could have had two guys who hit 10 threes in back-to-back nights. And then other thing, this was not really Kleiman's. This was not Kleiman's fault at all, but just another like little missed opportunity was not getting the Lakers pick last year. That was the Pelicans because it ended up in the top 10, I believe, or top 9, and would have been us if it was outside that range, which would have been in the Jalen Williams range. He looks incredible, and that's just
yeah, he does.
That's haunting me a little bit. And then obviously, I think trading D'Anthony Melton, I've talked about this. I think trading D'Anthony Melton was unnecessary. I understand like kind of clearing the way for John Conchar and some of the wings a little bit, but I think you could have used him as a piece in a bigger deal if you wanted to, for sure. Like a very, valuable piece. And I don't think it was necessary to trade him on draft night in order to get the guys we wanted. I think we could have not traded anything and come out with the same guys we ended up getting. So it's just those little moves that he values going, getting his guy more than anything. He doesn't value a second draft pick as much as he does getting his guy, or value a player who's, you know, he really values rookie contracts too. It seems like that. So it's just little missed opportunities where it's like, man, if we had Trey Murphy, if we had Jalen Williams, if we had De'Anthony Melton right now, like what would this team be? This would be amazing. And obviously every GM is going to have those, but I just wanted to bring up,
sure,
like, as much as we love Zach Kleiman, as much as we talk good about him, like these are like the kind of, these are the negatives that he has had. This is on his track.
Yeah. When I went to the Lakers Grizzlies game back in January 20th, I think it was the 20th. I had really good seats. We were very happy with them. And I saw Zach Kleiman come out of the tunnel and I like got goosebumps. And I was just sitting next to me, my wife, and I'm like, Alex, that's Zach Kleiman. She's like, who? What the hell is that? Like, yeah, that's Zach Kleiman. That's the GM of the Grizzlies. He's like, that's him. I took a picture of him too. I have a picture of Zach Kleiman on my phone.
You're probably the chilling. First person to take a picture, yeah, of Zach Kleiman as a fan.
Yeah, I do have a picture of him chilling on my phone that, yeah, I don't think I'll ever delete. Yeah, for real. No, and the other, looking back on the last draft as well, I was pretty high on Jake LaRavia coming out of the draft, but he hasn't contributed at all. He's had some good moments in the G League this year, but he hasn't been an NBA contributor this season. Whereas you look at how Walker Kessler has done for the Jazz. And yeah, hindsight's 2020. And I've talked about this on Twitter. And yeah, hindsight's 2020. But damn, wouldn't you love to have Walker Kessler right now with Steven Adams hurt? Whew, I would love that personally. Yeah. Just to have another rim protector, big body.
I'll say I really did not want Walker Kessler coming out of the draft. Like I was like, this guy's fine, like whatever. I don't want like the boring big. But yeah, he's been an excellent boring big. So
yeah,
like it would be nice to have him. Yeah.
Yeah. So hindsight is 2020. David Roddy's played good basketball as of late. So that's good for him. He's proven why he was drafted in the first place. But I wasn't big on David Roddy initially. And I've had people like in my mentions, like, how do you feel about David Roddy now, Francis? I'm like, shut the fuck up. I was wrong. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I was wrong about a guy.
I mean, he's played good for like 2 weeks. Like, let's calm down. He's still statistically been like the worst player in the NBA this season. So I don't, just let's take it with a grain of salt and calm down. Like, I would love for David Roddy to be our starting wing, like the wing we've been looking for. But like, let's just slow the roll a little bit.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. No, I think what you bring up about Kleiman is 100% fair. So, do you want to talk about the Dylan Brooks stuff, or do you want to do playoff stuff and then just like playoff prediction for the Grizzlies and talk about matchups? Like, how do you feel like closing this pod?
I'll go through the Dylan Brooks thing in 1 minute, and then we can move
on. Sure.
Yeah. So my topic name here was Dylan Brooks hatred halo effect. Meaning that the hatred that everyone has for Dylan Brooks, it affects the rest of the team. It spreads to the rest of the team. Everyone else is absorbed into that orbit.
Good hand motions.
Yeah. Yeah. No, those are good. This is going to be great on our, turn on the YouTube camera. This is going to be great.
That's right.
the thing that sparked this, I think for me, was the Desmond Bane flagrant 2 call. On Kevin Love, which was absolutely ridiculous, absurd call. If you want to call it a flagrant 1, are you okay? I know you're choking over there.
I choke on water.
Yeah, that's all. If you want to call it a flagrant 1, fine for like incidental, unnecessary, or whatever, inappropriate contact, whatever you want to call it. That's fine. It was not in any way intentional. It was in fact a blocking foul on Kevin Love. It was just like his arm hit him and then just like his elbow hit his groin, and that like made his arm, the momentum carried his arm up. So like it looked, I don't know how you look at that and think that's intentional, and no one would have, that's my point, is no one would have if it was not for Dylan Brooks. No one would have if it was not for Dylan Brooks, because of Dylan, every Grizzlies player is presumed guilty, you know, before they're presumed innocent.
Good, so legal stuff. That was nice.
Yeah. Thank you. That's all I know. I didn't even say it right, and that is the most basic thing you could say.
I wasn't going to talk shit.
Yeah,
that's fine.
So yeah, but that's, I think that's, everyone is just kind of grouped in with Dylan, and not only do the refs see us that way, not as the public see us in this villain way. Every team, because of it, every team gives us their absolute best, and like we have to bring it every night, and that just kind of ups the difficulty level, and like we've done a great job handling that, but it gets to the point where it's more detractive than it is additive, because you're turning everyone against you, and it feels like we're getting to that boiling point. So that's basically all I wanted to say about that.
Yeah, I think again those are fair points. I heard I obviously graduated from law school a couple years ago, but I heard the grapevine that in the sports law class that they offer right now, that they had a whole class dedicated to the Grizzlies and dedicated to John Morant. And I heard about this because one of Alex's friends messaged me on Instagram about it. Oh, and her friend was like, how do you feel about the Grizzlies? I know you're from Memphis, blah, blah, blah. Like, what's going on? And she mentioned how the professor said that the Grizzlies are trying to be like the bad boy Pistons of the NBA, and saying how that's such a bad thing. That's not who they are, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, first of all, the bad boy Pistons won back-to-back NBA titles. So yeah. If that happens, then great. Like, and then who cares? They won two championships in a row. So like that was a weird comparison, but also the professor is an old white guy. So whatever. Anyway, it's the Dylan Brooks thing is him by himself has helped create this aura around the Grizzlies of they're corny, they're fake, it's fake toughness, they're annoying, they're just like, he's getting the Pat Bev treatment, like he's just like running around and being loud and in someone's face and like he's corny, blah, blah, blah. Whereas like, he's one of those dudes where you would rather have him on your team than play against him, I feel. And it's also debatable whether the Grizzlies fans want him on the team.
Yeah.
But like we've been saying this for years, that if he just plays with it himself, he's a fine offensive player. He's fine. He's not good, but he's a fine offensive player. He doesn't hurt the team. And he is a really good defender. I'm actually curious. I'm curious if he's going to get all defensive votes, but he's a good defensive player.
He should.
For real. Yeah, like, I think he should.
I mean, I think you've seen it. Like, he guards the toughest matchups in the league. And of all the guys who do guard the toughest matchups, he holds his matchups to like the worst field goal percentage. That's first team all defense stuff right there. Like, no question.
Yeah.
I would imagine he probably ends up a second team all defense because, again, just of the hatred for him. So,
yeah. But he will be hopefully an all defensive player. He's a great defender. And as long as he just plays within himself offensively, then he's a contributor in that regard. But yeah, it's like the extra stuff. It's the stuff that makes Dylan Brooks Dylan Brooks is what's causing this effect, as you mentioned, on the Grizzlies. And like, I agree that it's 100% carrying over.
Right.
So let's close this part talking about playoff stuff, because it's almost that time, y'all. There's about like 8 games left in the regular season, and we're about reaching the crunch time. Getting into playoffs, where seeding is going to be very important. The Grizzlies haven't locked up the second seed in the West yet, but they are currently second in the West. I think they're a game up on Sacramento. That's just off the top of my head. I might be wrong. But they are currently game and a half up on Sacramento. So that's a decent cushion with 8 games left. But as we know, things change in the Western Conference in the blink of an eye, especially from seeds 4 through like 10. Like, those seeds right now will probably be different by the end of the regular season. And so in terms of realistic playoff matchups, we'll talk about that in a second. Let's talk about that first, and then we'll do our prediction. Let's do playoff matchup first. So, Grant, I'll pose a question to you. Best/worst realistic playoff matchup in the first round for the Memphis Grizzlies.
You want 2 matchups, best and worst?
Yeah, best and worst.
Okay. Best is I'm not sure how realistic. I mean, like it's realistic. It's possible. The Thunder would be the best one for sure.
Really?
Yes. I think
that's
the team that scares me the least. It's weird because like there's a lot of teams who are like not that good, but they still scare me. The Thunder are one that don't scare me.
Okay.
Obviously, they have Shea, very good player, and a talented and feisty young roster behind him. But yeah, I would go Thunder. Everyone else has more experience, more proven players. And I think our most of these teams are worst matchups for the Grizzlies. So I go Thunder is my best one. Worst, it's funny because the two teams that I think would have been like the worst matchups for the Grizzlies relative to how good those teams actually are, meaning like they're not actually that good, but they're like really bad matchups for the Grizzlies, would have been the Timberwolves and the Mavericks. And both of those teams acquired star players that I feel like actually make them better matchups for the Grizzlies now, that like I would be happier about. Like I'm happy with Luka not having the ball and Kyrie having the ball instead. Fine with that. And obviously Rudy Gobert allows us to keep Steven Adams on the floor if Steven Adams is healthy. Last year, the Timberwolves were not a good matchup because they played Steven Adams on the floor and they had really good athleticism to bother John and Desmond on the perimeter. But Rudy Gobert, I think actually would make that matchup better for us. So not as scared of them. Worst realistic matchup would be the Warriors.
Warriors? Yeah.
Just
because it's the Warriors.
Yeah. They are coming for our throats for sure. They're playing extra motivated there. And they just kind of have our number so far. I don't think we would 100% lose. I wouldn't like just 100% be like, oh, yeah, Warriors are winning that series, but it would definitely be pretty scary. And they would probably be the favorites in that series, I think, from the betting houses. So
yeah.
Yeah, Warriors.
My counter to the Warriors is obviously they are horrific on the road and we will have home court advantage. Yeah, so like fair. I would just lock in Grizzlies in seven, like, cause we have home court. Like, I feel like we gotta, like, I don't think Golden State is gonna win a game on the road. I don't think we could. It would be hard to win a game on the road, and if we do,
We're bad on the road too.
Yeah, we're bad on the road too. So it's like we would just be thankful we have home court, and I think we'd win it in seven. That would be my gut pick, but I wouldn't change it. Like, I would stick to that gut pick, like 100%.
Yeah.
That's my thing with the Warriors, that they're perfect on the road. We have home court. I think so. The best matchup, it probably is the Thunder. I kind of discounted them because, well, they're 10th and Dallas is 11th. So I was, Thunder. Yes, I agree. Thunder.
They're tied with Dallas. There's a fair chance they fall out. But as of this moment, it is realistic. It is within the realm of possibility that they're the Grizzlies matchup. So,
yeah, so I agree. Realistically, the Thunder. But I would love the matchup against Dallas because they can't defend anybody. Like their defense is, it's horrific. Like I listened to Zach Lowe podcast with Jeff Van Gundy. Hi, Zach. And Jeff was like, they're tiny. He said it like six times. Yeah. Jeff just saying tiny. Like a bunch of that was funny to me. But yeah, they're a tiny team. They really can't defend on the perimeter. They also can't defend at the rim. That's why I really, if I were the fucking Dallas GM, I would have traded for Jakob Poeltl, like I stated when we did our trade stuff, because he helps a lot of issues. You can funnel a guy to a legitimate rim protector in Jakob Poeltl at the rim, because they don't have a rim protector at all.
Yeah,
they don't have perimeter defense, so you have no defense if you don't have either of them.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
I think go ahead.
It's the it's becoming mismanagement there. Not re-signing Jalen Brunson and then trading for Kyrie, who's maybe better, but more expensive, and obviously is Kyrie Irving.
It's a rental. Is like, a fucking if he could headache. Leave.
A rental, exactly. And then having to give up Dorian Finney-Smith for that. And who else did they give up? Spencer Dinwiddie in that? Spencer Dinwiddie. So they could have had right now Luka, Spencer Dinwiddie, Jalen Brunson, Dorian Finney-Smith, Christian Wood, and then maybe go make a trade for Jakob Poeltl or somebody like that.
Yeah, I mean, injuries have affected their slide, but when they traded for him, they were fifth in the West. So, they're now 11th. Again, it's a very tight standings between those seedings. But, and again, injuries have affected it, but it's still, there's credence to that the trade for Kyrie hurting the Mavs.
I mean, that's crazy. It's hurting them on the floor. Like I think the worst case scenario we all saw was like they're going to be a little better on the floor, but then like he's just gonna tear them apart mentally and emotionally, and then he's gonna leave after a year. That was the worst case, but they're already worse with him. Like they're 3-7 with him and Luka together. They're already worse with him on the floor, and that's gonna lead to him probably exploding even faster, and then he's gonna be gone, and like it's just gonna be one of the worst trades ever.
Yeah, that is looking more and more likely. I mean, hell, again, it was mentioned on the Cyclone podcast, but if Dallas, they could theoretically, they're 11th, they could miss the play-in. And if they miss the play-in, Grant, oh my God, like that, it'll be chaos in Dallas. Like, I don't know, no one knows what's going to happen with that franchise if they miss the play-in. Like, they are going to be in some serious trouble. They're going to have to do some serious soul searching if that happens. Okay, so best matchups, Thunder, Dallas, the best matchups. Worst, I do think the Lakers at fully healthy would not be good. I would not want to face a fully healthy Lakers, but that's a massive if, because
it's a big if.
Ron and AD can't stay healthy at the same time for a consistent amount of time. So that's a massive if. But if that does happen, that is a worry, because it's LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and an actual formidable roster around them. So they did the opposite of what Dallas did. They actually made a decent roster around LeBron, AD, getting Jared Vanderbilt, who he's just been awesome for him. Malik Beasley is a really good shooter, fits the mold of guys that you need around LeBron. D'Lo's been really good. He's been really good for the Lakers. So I that is a scary matchup if they are fully healthy. It would be a fun one, because I could theoretically go to a Lakers game and watch them in the playoffs and spend like $1,000 for a playoff ticket. No, I would not be spending $1,000. I will stay my ass home if that is the cost of a playoff ticket. So I like that in mind. I prefer that we play the Clippers, because those will be much cheaper.
Yeah.
If we play the Clippers, I will go, because they will be much cheaper than if we play the Lakers. So worse, I think, if the Clippers were fully healthy, I'd say the Clippers, but they're not. Who knows what happens with Paul George? Who knows? I mean, it's a sad thing, quite frankly.
Can we count the Suns as realistic? I mean, they're only two games above seventh right now.
Yeah, I mean,
That would be worse.
If KD comes back fully healthy.
Yeah.
Sidebar question. How do you feel about... And I'm going to say this buzz phrase that's been on every single basketball podcast since KD got traded to the Suns. He is the perfect plug-and-play player for the Phoenix Suns. So all of y'all out there, take a shot, because that's like every podcast has said this phrase like one time at least when they talk about Kevin Durant. But he is. He is the perfect plug-and-play guy. So where are you on the fence of, or on the line of, it should matter that they've played like no time together? Because he's got hurt. So they're going to go into the playoffs, and we always talk about continuity and time to get used to each other and all this stuff. Do you think that should matter with Kevin Durant, or are you on the other side where it's like, it doesn't matter. It's Kevin Durant. The Suns will be fine. He's just going to get healthy and they'll be fine.
I mean, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter at all, but I mean, definitely as far as integrating a superstar into your team goes, it's definitely the easiest path. Like it's the easiest one to do. So like there probably will be some bumps in the road, but there's no other answer other than like, he's a plug and play superstar. He's the Bill Gates, Harrison Barnes.
The Bill Gates, Harrison. Oh, I get what you're saying. Yeah. I understand now. Yeah. I understand. I was like, what the heck is that comparison? Okay. I get it now. I understand.
Yeah. That one was circuitous, I'll say. I would be on the side of the fence as it there's minimal matter to effect. That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I mean, I think I am too, because again, it's Kevin Durant. But it'll be interesting. Like, it's another storyline to add on to the playoffs is how they look. Is how healthy is KD gonna be. I mean, he got hurt. Like in warmups, I mean, like, did he go up for a layup and like he fell, or like, I'm forgetting exactly.
He went for a layup and rolled his ankle and just
crawled. Yeah, like, yeah. What the heck? Like that's wild. Like that's scary. Yeah. Like I played basketball the day after. It was like, am I going to roll my ankle? Like that's terrifying.
Yeah.
But either way, so Yeah, the Suns would be, if it happens, I would be so sad if we face the Suns in the first round.
Yeah.
That would take like a pretty big, again, like I said, 2 games out of 7. I don't know who owns the tiebreaker between them and the Wolves, or the Lakers for that matter. I have no idea. But that would suck. If we face the Suns in the first round, that would be horrible. So let's close talking about your playoff predictions for the Memphis Grizzlies. Because I went on record stating that I believe that the Memphis Grizzlies, if Steven Adams is healthy, when I say healthy, I'm talking like he is healthy. He is the Steven Adams we need him to be for the playoffs. That's who he is. That's what he needs. Obviously, the Brandon Clark, that injury sucks. That whole issue is so – that hurts the team so much. It's not good. I hate that it happened. It's the worst timing. Hopefully, he comes back healthy and he's okay. But in terms of Steven Adams, hopefully he comes back healthy for the playoffs and he's looking like Steven Adams. If that's the case and the rest of the Grizzlies are healthy, Ja, Desmond, Jaren, et cetera, I believe the Grizzlies will win the West because there's so much turmoil and fragility with all of these teams that if the Grizzlies are the ones who can stay healthy, can keep the continuity, can keep playing at the highest level that they can, I think they can win the Western Conference. And if they finish with a 2 seed where they're going to get home court against Sacramento, if they face them, they won't get home court against Denver, which will hurt because playing in Denver sucks. But Denver's defense has been atrocious over the past like 2 weeks. They've shown a lot of flaws. It's me just trying to be upbeat and optimistic. That's my prediction if Steven Adams is healthy and the rest of the Grizzlies, of course. If that doesn't happen, dude, we could lose in the first round. We could lose in the first round. There's no question about that. So what are your thoughts?
So you're taking the Grizzlies, healthy Grizzlies, over the field?
I am taking the healthy Grizzlies over the field. Yeah.
Okay. The West is wide open. The Nuggets are not a dominant 1 seed that you might be used to. Jamal Murray is inconsistent. Michael Porter Jr. is what he is. Obviously the home court advantage for them is huge. And I don't think because of that and because of just the Grizzlies being bad on the road in general, if that matchup came, I don't think I would have the Grizzlies over the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals. Fair. I think that's where I stand. It's looking like that's going to be the matchup in the Western Conference Finals. But then again, all it takes is for one of these teams in turmoil, like you said, to just kind of hit right with the health, with the Suns, right. Clippers, Warriors, Lakers, all of them just like hit right for one series. All of them can definitely beat the Grizzlies. So it's not like a clear path, but it is definitely, there definitely is a path there. That's not as tough as it has been in previous years. That said, I don't think I would take the Grizzlies over the field. No.
Sure. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, again, maybe I like being the optimist. So yeah. I would love it.
I'll say this. I'm planning to go to Memphis for a couple weeks in May.
Nice.
And I've been wanting to make a trip just for a couple weeks for a while now. Just so I didn't have to like rush everything and then could kind of relax and see everybody, do all the things I want to do. But I was like, might as well like align it with the playoffs and go to see a game. So I'm planning on going like the 15th of May, I think, which would be the end of the second round. So I'm like probably guarantee I can at least catch one game at the very minimum. And then if they win second round, I'll be there for basically the whole conference finals.
Yeah.
Conference finals. And then past that, I told my boss, I was like, if they make the finals, I don't want to tell you, I don't want to tell you I'm remote for a month, but like, I'm going to have to be there. But like, it's kind of weird timing. Cause like, I couldn't plan around the finals as well. Like plan to be there during the finals. Cause that would have made me have to be there for a long time or made me be there past the end of the second round and not guarantee myself a game. So I want to at least be able to go to like guarantee a game. So like, it's weird timing. I'm like telling them like, hey, like they're probably not making the finals, but if they do, like, I'm going to need to be there. And like, so I don't know, just, I guess, my point there is I would love to see it, and I would love to be in Memphis for that. So it's not out of the question at all.
Yeah. No, with the West being so wide open, you just can't dismiss Memphis if Adams is healthy. You just can't. You can't do that. That would be irrational. Excuse me. That would be irrational. That would be ludicrous. That would be absurd. If you're going to just totally dismiss the Grizzlies with a healthy Stephen Adams playing like the way he was during the regular season, that's stupid. This is a damn good team. Even without Brandon Clark and with the West in turmoil, yeah, it's possible.
I'm also interested to just see what the playoff Grizzlies look like, this new version of the playoff Grizzlies looks like with Jaren having taken a leap, with Desmond having taken a leap. We'll see how much of an effect that has on their half court playoff offense, basically. So
I think it should have a positive one. Like Jaws' first game back, there was a great 2-man action with Jaren and Desmond Bane in the corner. Like it was a dribble handoff, and then there's like two dribble handoffs, and then Desmond came off the it was in the right corner. Desmond came around, Jaren rolled to the rim, and Desmond found Jaren on a lineup. It was just beautiful. Like if they can get a 2-man game that's effective, that is almost impossible to stop because you have to play up on Des or he's going to shoot it on top of you. And Desmond has gotten so much better navigating a pick and roll, so much better, making the right reads, making the right pass, and finishing at the rim. And we've talked about Desmond's finishing at the rim when he doesn't really have long arms. How is he such a good finisher? He doesn't have, it's weird. It's like he bodies off the defender because he's so strong and creates the space to go up. But either way, he's become a really good finisher at the rim. Perfect world. John Morant's absence becomes a blessing in disguise because it allowed Jaren to really find himself as an offensive threat and given Desmond more touches, Tyus Jones more confidence. Like, perfect world. This was actually more help for the Grizzlies than it hurt. Perfect world.
Yeah. One thing I forgot to talk about, and I think is important to get in while we're getting all our Grizzly stuff out, is that Tyus has been, like, everyone talks about how Tyus starting point guard. Like, he's starting level point guard, best backup point guard in the league, steps right in with Jaws out. Tyus is so much better as a starter than he is a reserve. Like, he's...
Yeah.
I'm going to look at his stats right now because I don't have them in front of me, but I think he's like 50-40 as a starter and then shoots like 41-36 as a reserve. Let me see if I can find his splits. So I don't know if that's just entirely, I haven't looked at it on like a lineup basis. Here it is. He shoots 51% from the field, 45% from three as a starter in 20 games. In 53 games this year, he shoots 40% from the field, 35% from three as a reserve. That trend is not as strong last year. I thought it might be stronger last year. There's a little bit of that trend from last year, but not very much. Over his career, there is that trend in general, but not as strong as this year. This year is like kind of a big difference there. We need to be able to get, like I said, like I haven't looked at the lineup basis. I'm not sure if it's just because he's playing so much with Ja and like he doesn't fit well with Ja, but we need to be able to get starter level production, not production obviously on a per game basis, but efficiency from Tyus when he's coming off in reserve role. We have not been able to get that. So I think there's like this perception because of what Tyus does when he steps in that like he's still that player when he goes to the bench, and he just has, that is not how it's played out. We need to be able to get that. I think that's going to be crucial for us in the playoffs, be able to get that from him when he's not the starter, when he is playing with some minutes with Ja, when he's playing with the backups to bring that same level of play.
Yeah, and I think you kind of touched on perhaps the reasoning. It's like the lineups, like when he starts, he's got Desmond, Jaren, Dylan Brooks out there as well to play defense. And whereas when he comes off the bench, it's not the same. Like the Grizzlies bench is not, this might be wrong. I don't know off the top of my head, but I would guess that the bench isn't as good as it was last year. That's my guess. And I probably would be right.
Yeah.
And so like the bench unit isn't as dynamic, doesn't have the pop in the past. So Tyus is kind of running out there. Obviously he's trying to do his best, but you could argue he's the best offensive option from the bench and Tyus Jones. And that's not great. Like you kind of hope that there's another like microwave score to come off the bench and help out a bench unit, but you're kind of relying on Tyus to do that. So he's taking, lower percentage shots. Whereas with the starters, he's playing with a better unit, with more spacing, with more rim running, and more just more offensive threats than on the bench, right? Than he is on the bench. So that would be my guess as to why the numbers look that way. But still, either way, I agree that getting that production from Tyus would be really great. More efficiency, as you said, would be really helpful for the Grizzlies. Yeah.
Yeah. I was not going to expect him to shoot, you know, 51-45%, but like if he could, we can't have him shooting 40% of the field. Like if he can shoot 45% and, you know, 37 from three, then that's what I'm going to want from him.
Yeah, agreed. All right, last thoughts on the Grizzlies before we close, Grant. I mean, it's been a lot, man.
Yeah.
Like I'm a little exhausted talking about the Grizzlies for the past like month and a half. It's all of like really I've talked about with people. It's just a lot, you know, but it is what it is. We're at playoffs time.
Yeah, it's very weird to be the central of all the attention and little town called Memphis. But yeah, thanks to our listeners for indulging us. Thank you, Connor, for indulging us when we've talked about Memphis unwarranted on basically every episode.
Right.
Connor, you can come back now. We've gotten all of our Grizzlies talks out. We're not going to bring them up for at least three more episodes, we'll say. You can come back. You can come back.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, Connor, we miss you. All the listeners, thank you all for being on this journey. 50 episodes. It's an awesome milestone just to hit. And we look forward to growing as a pod, growing our brand. And we appreciate all y'all who have stuck with us throughout this time. For Grant Hechinger, Francis Carlotta, we'll see y'all next time. Oh, don't forget to comment on the comment. What are you commenting on? Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. What are you commenting on? Subscribe to our podcast. Give us 5 stars. You know, follow us on Twitter at the Up Another Podcast and follow Grant on Twitter at Grant Hechinger. I'm Slug of Sports on Twitter as well. All right, until next time. Peace. Cool days, hot tops, with my blue face, ice pops. I'ma make a shoelace, necklace. Yeah, we whipping pops on Lexus. And I'm skipping school days, mic drops. Eyes on summer like Cyclops. Yeah, we fallin' off the sidewalk. Mama, what's your homeboy?